Case number 22-3934, Kelsey Mercer versus Athens County, Ohio, et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. McLaughlin, you may proceed for the appellant.
Good morning. My name is Craig McLaughlin, and I represent the appellant, Kelsey Mercer, the administrator of the estate of Jennifer Olinger. I'd request 3 minutes reserved for rebuttal time.
Sure.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, appellant Kelsey Mercer requests that this court reverse the district court's decision to grant summary judgment to the jail nurse Gray and corrections officers Lowry and Jarvis. Your Honors, because my time is limited and because the legal authority I'd like to discuss this morning is new, I'd like to focus in on the claim being made against jail nurse Gray. Just 3 days ago, this court issued a decision that's very relevant and applicable to this case. The case is Howe versus NAP Care Inc., N-A-P-H-C-A-R-E Inc., and that decision was issued on Monday. And in that particular case, it involved a pretrial detainee, just like the situation in this case, at the Hamilton County Justice Center, who died of a sickle cell crisis. Summary judgment for the jail nurse Jordan was granted by the trial court in that case, but that decision was reversed by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Summary judgment was not appropriate in that case, according to this court, for the claim that was made against jail nurse Jordan for many reasons. The pretrial detainee's sickle cell crisis and death was an objective, serious medical need. The nurse had examined the patient and knew that that pretrial detainee had sickle cell disease. The jail nurse had heard that the patient complained of leg and back pain. She had heard complaints that he could not feel his legs. She had witnessed him fall out of a wheelchair and roll on the floor. And she believed he was in pain and was not faking. But despite knowing all those things, the jail nurse in that case did nothing to treat the patient for the sickle cell crisis and the excruciating pain, except put him in a restraint chair and to put him in a observation cell in the mental health unit. In that case, there was also expert testimony from a doctor that a sickle cell patient complained of severe pain represents a medical emergency, and the patient needed to go to the emergency room. So in light of that evidence, earlier this week, this court issued the decision and ruled that the district court erred in granting summary judgment to the pretrial detainee or to the particular nurse in that case. A similar ruling should be made in this case against Nurse Gray. Nurse Gray was the jail nurse at the Southeast Ohio Regional Jail. In this case, I mentioned Jennifer Olinger was a pretrial detainee. And in this case, Nurse Gray knew that she had fallen when she came out of her cell. That's on the video, that's part of the court record. He knew that she had hit her head hard, also visible on the video. He knew that she had experienced two seizures. That information was relayed to him. He knew that she had experienced a loss of consciousness. He knew that she was staggering. That's shown in the video when she's being sent back to her jail cell. He knew that she had urinated on herself. And he knew that she had complained about a headache.
So you're focusing then on all of the symptoms and going to the last encounter with Gray, is that right?
Correct, yeah, because there were two different times that he examined her. The first time was in the open common area of the jail. That's shown on video. He quickly takes some vital signs and does a neuro check. The whole interaction is very brief.
And then he sends her back. And then within minutes, she has another, I'll call it episode, just to summarize. And then Nurse Gray sees her for 20 minutes or something like that. Is that right?
Well, I don't know that it was that long. That happened, because that's not on video, that happened back in his office, or mm-hmm. like the nurse's office. But yeah, there was a...
And then he sends her back again, and that's when the fatal consequences
Correct.
Happen.
Correct. Mm-hmm. But at the first time and then that he examined her, he knew seizure, loss of consciousness, hit her head hard. All those things were known. And then even more information was given to him the second interaction. The new information was, hey, she's had another seizure. She's urinated on herself. It got progressively worse between the first interaction he had with her and the second interaction. And in addition to that, I mean, he knew he admitted during his deposition testimony that hitting your head or having a seizure can all lead to life-threatening injuries. He also admitted to me during his deposition that he should have consulted a doctor because he knew that Jennifer had experienced a loss of consciousness. He was also admitted he was aware of the jail nursing guidelines that state that you should consult a doctor or transfer the patient to the emergency room if there is a loss of consciousness or a seizure. And in this case, there were both, and he was aware of that.
So how do we distinguish between negligence and recklessness? Because we have to have recklessness involved, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, the standard is objective serious need and then recklessness. The other side concedes that this was an objective serious medical need that she had. So we're really just talking about, does this rise to the level of recklessness? And I would submit to you that under these facts, Your Honor, it does. A nurse can't make a diagnosis. I mean, he wasn't a nurse practitioner who can make a diagnosis. He wasn't a doctor. He's got policies and procedures, which I recognize by itself, that may just prove negligence, but that put him on notice that this is a serious situation when you have loss of consciousness or a seizure that requires him to, hey, let's loop in a doctor. That was never done. Rather, all he did was do a cursory exam, took some few vital signs. He ordered a urinalysis test, because although he's not permitted to make a diagnosis, I guess in his mind he was thinking maybe it was either dehydration or a urinary tract infection, but never looped in a doctor.
Or a diabetic situation, because I thought that he tested the blood sugar too.
Well, that he was going to run that panel, and again, a nurse by themselves are not allowed to do that, but apparently he testified there was a standing order from their medical consultant that said a nurse could order a lab test. So that was done. But
I thought he did a finger prick and got the result of the blood sugar at that point in time.
My understanding, the only real-time analysis or new information he got was like a urine dip to test the UTI. But to go back, I mean, the facts in this are much more compelling than even what were in the Howe case, where this court ruled that met the recklessness standard. Also, like in Howe, we had in the record an affidavit from Dr. Gormley, who is a neurosurgeon at Harvard, and he says that what Jennifer had, her medical needs were serious, and she would not have died if she had been sent to the hospital when the serious medical needs were brought to Nurse Gray's attention.
Did the district judge discount the Gormley affidavit because it was reaching legal conclusions?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last.
I thought that the district judge here said that the affidavit of Gormley was to be discounted because he was reaching legal conclusions as opposed to a medical expert.
Well, I agree. I don't think an expert is allowed to rule, give a legal conclusion, but even contained within the affidavit was this is a serious medical need, and she would have survived had she been sent to an emergency room for treatment. So that part, I think, is in the record and is not, going to a legal conclusion. It's providing relevant medical information, just like what was used in the Howe case. Your Honor, therefore, as it relates to Nurse Gray, we believe that the decision by the trial court should be reversed.
Assuming there was a constitutional violation, how do you show that it was clearly established?
That was established, clearly established, that they were aware of. Your Honor, as far back as 1972, there has been case law that says, not responding to somebody whose medical needs is a constitutional deprivation. And since 2013, in this case, it's clearly established a prisoner has a right to not have his known serious medical needs disregarded. Even in the Dominguez case, which was from 2009, in that particular case, it was recognized that that was a clear constitutional violation to deprive of the person's medical needs. And, you know, in my brief, I think both sides, we discussed, you know, a three-prong test. But with this case that came out on Monday, you know, the court has said there's really just a two-prong test. Is there an objective serious medical need? And then does this rise to the level of recklessness? And we would submit that it does. As to the claims against the corrections officers, Lowry and Jarvis, I concede that it's a closer call regarding the corrections officers, but still, I think their conduct in this matter rises to the level of recklessness.
What did they do that was reckless?
Sure. Well, they don't have the same medical training as Nurse Gray, but they were clearly aware that she was unsteady on her feet. They were
Didn't they go get Nurse Gray, each of them?
They did. They did take her. But that passing off a whether it's a prisoner or a pretrial detainee to a medical person, that does not absolve them of any responsibility. I mean, it doesn't insulate them from liability if they had other information. And in this particular case, they knew, because they saw it with their own eyes, things that are obvious to even a layperson.
You know, what should they have done then when the nurse says, I'm taking care of Ms. Olinger, I'm sending her back, and we're going to get blood tests and so forth?
What they should have done, Your Honor, is what was put in a policy that they did not follow, and that is notify their supervisor, notify the warden. Had they notified the warden and the warden got involved here, you know, we'll never know for sure, but more than likely he would have said, hey, get this patient to the hospital, or have you even called the doctor, Nurse Gray? So for these reasons, Your Honor, we would ask that the decision from the trial court be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Aaron Glasgow here on behalf of the appellees James Gray, Charity Lowry, and Amiston Jarvis, urging you to affirm the decision of the district court granting summary judgment in this case. As the appellee, I'm going to hop around a little bit and answer some of your questions first and then go to my discussion. First of all, Judge Moore, you're absolutely right. He did do a blood sugar test after he did the urine dip. He found an abnormality, and then he did a blood sugar test. Based on that blood sugar test, he also ordered CBC, further blood testing. And at the time that she had the third fatal episode, they were actually waiting for someone to come from outside to do that test. So she was actually in the midst of being treated when she had that final episode, that unfortunate final fatal episode. Your other question about the expert witness, Mr. Gormley, the judge did find and exclude his or ignore his opinion. It was a short opinion and basically expressed nothing but legal conclusions about deliberate indifference, and that was proper for him to do that. And finally, Judge Mathis, you skipped to the end of my outline about qualified immunity. It is not as easy to answer you as counsel did to say, well, this is the idea that you shouldn't be deliberately indifferent to a inmate's medical needs has been around since at least 1972. But we know the case law says that it's more specific than that, right? There has to be a case that's more on point for clearly established. And I would say in this case, what you would be looking for is something that instructs a person in Mr. Gray's position to say, when you have people like inmates telling you, this person, non-medical people that have observations that this person had a seizure, telling you things like that, and then you do your own testing, which he did, his own analysis, and that information that he gleaned from that conflicted with what he was being told. He was being told she's having a seizure. He came to her, looked at her, and said, she doesn't look like she's post-ictal. There's things that generally people look like after they've had a seizure, and he didn't see that. They said she hit her head hard. He's thinking, okay, You know, there's things that he should be able to examine for, to look at, and he's not finding those. He's also doing a full analysis of her, and he's not finding any deficits, which is what he testified to. So I think the law you'd be looking for would be law that would tell him, clearly established law that would tell him, you have to disregard that information that you've learned. You've got, people have told you she, this has happened to her. Those things are serious. You need to send her to the ER. And there is no law that I'm aware of that says that.
He also testified he should have called the doctor upon learning that she had a seizure. Is that right?
I believe his testimony was very much in hindsight. He was asking what he should have done, given what he, everything that they know. Obviously, somebody will say after they find that somebody's had a cerebral hemorrhage that they should have seen that. I think medical professionals often would think that when they've made a mistake. Right, and that's, at the end of the day, that's what the district court found, and that's what we're arguing here, is that at most, Nurse Gray made a mistake.
But why isn't there a genuine issue of material fact as to whether this was negligence or recklessness? In which case, we should send this case on as opposed to having summary judgment.
Right. Thank you. Because there are no. There are no issues of fact in terms of credibility, in terms of anybody to figure out what happened or what didn't happen. With a standard, you can take the evidence that we all know happened and say, does that meet the standard? In this case, that standard is recklessness, depending on where you come out with this case law. And our position is, regardless of whether in this whole Brawner succession of cases, if you apply the objective test, you still objectively looking at the information that he had before him, you can't say that it was obvious to him. Now, I looked hard at that case law to try, and it's a good question that you asked to opposing counsel about, what is recklessness? I couldn't find it in there. The only word I could find that told me what that standard was obvious. The state standard is conscious disregard for a known risk. The only word that I could key in on to figure out what reckless meant in this post-Brawner world is obvious. And so I'm looking for evidence that would make it obvious to Nurse Gray that she was having a serious medical condition. And that's when I come back to the fact that he's getting conflicting information from what he's being told, from what he's seen.
Now, your friend on the other side seems to believe that Hal impacts our analysis in this case. What are your thoughts on how impacts this case?
On Hal?
Hal.
Thank you.
Hal decision.
That's where I was going to start. It's a completely different case. I think the single biggest piece that distinguishes is that the medical professional in that case knew the inmate had sickle cell anemia. That was in his records right there. I knew that he had sickle cell anemia. Then she also admitted that she knew all of the symptoms of sickle cell anemia. And then she admitted that she knew he was having all of those symptoms that she knew related to the condition that he had. That is a far cry from here. She did a medical screen in the beginning, and other than the fact that she indicated or there was information that she was a IV drug user, there was no information about any medical condition that she had that would suggest that the symptoms that happened, these episodes, were related to a specific condition that he then ignored. Obviously, there's also the egregiousness of, in light of all those things and how with the sickle cell anemia, the condition, and the symptoms that they saw, put the inmate in a isolation room in a restraint chair, I believe, and under observation. That's obviously not what happened here.
Isn't part of the problem that Ms. Olinger wasn't put under observation here, that she was sent back to the cell? Where then, tell me where I'm wrong, but approximately an hour later, she's found completely comatose and in the throes of death.
Right. Well, I mean, she was observed in terms of the fact that Lowry did go by and look in on her. You can see that from the video. And I had thought about that in preparing here today. Given how the events transpired, and I don't think they're physically, well, actually, I don't know if there's anything in the record. We don't know whether or not they're physically in a situation where she could have stayed in the medical unit or anything else. But she was in her cell. The guards make rounds. So I don't recall specifically if he had said for her to be observed. But I think she was not in an isolation cell or anything like that, as they had in Howell.
Was Ms. Olinger in a cell with other people?
My understanding of the layout is, which is typical, they're in a pod, and then in the pod there are rooms off of the pod, and the doors are open. I mean, there's nothing stopping people. There's windows, and the rooms or doors are open, and you can look in and see people in their beds. So I guess the answer is yes and no. They're in with a lot of other people. There's a lot of other prisoners there. And as you know from the record, it's the prisoners that made the calls to say, hey, she's having an episode, we're seeing something with her. There was nothing stopping them from observing her, and actually, and did, to make the final call.
You would concede that in terms of the legal standard to be applied here, that we're governed by the Browner case and not Trotsky or some of the other cases mentioned in the briefs, correct?
Yeah, I think trying to untangle that progression, I believe that presently Browner and not Trotsky, the Trotsky interpretation of Browner would apply, and that's the Hemphenshire case.
Well, not if the Trotsky interpretation of Browner is incorrect. It wouldn't apply in that instance.
If Browner is incorrect?
No, if Trotsky is incorrect in this interpretation of Browner, then we would not take into account Trotsky's interpretation, if that's incorrect.
I agree with you, and I think the district court's decision was, and my briefing, because we didn't know that yet, that was based on Trotsky. Now, I know I will point out, I'm thinking of the name of the case.
Helfenstein is the big case, right?
Right, but what I would go back actually to, Your Honor, is to your decision in Bowles versus Bourbon County, which I think was before Browner set the standard, but it was a similar type of case. And it was post-Kingsley, pre-Browner, if I'm not mistaken. And so in that case, you, the court, said, I know Kingsley's out there, this is up in flux, but this case is one we can analyze under assuming that there's an objective standard. And I would actually point that case out as being closer factually to this case than certainly the Howell case, this recent Howell case, or the other cases are cited in appellant's brief. In that case, as you recall, basically there was an inmate. It turns out he had a brain lesion, very serious brain lesion that manifests in the kinds of seizures and kinds of things as in this case. And the jail staff thought it was a sinus infection. And they treated her like it was a sinus infection, or treated him rather, as it was a sinus infection or some other, a migraine or a sinus infection, did testing, was ambiguous. They continued to treat the prisoner as if it was a sinus infection over a long course of time. And then eventually the prisoner basically collapsed. They sent the prisoner to the prisoner actually had collapsed several times. Eventually it got very serious. They sent him to the hospital. It turns out it was a brain lesion, and the prisoner died. The ruling was, even under the objective test, assuming Kingsley changed it to an objective test, that was no more than mere negligence. I think the facts actually in that case, in Bowles, are more significantly more egregious here for a longer period of time than in this case. This whole episode happened over the course of 2 hours and 15 minutes. That case happened over days, I don't maybe even weeks, if I recall correctly. So I think if you're looking for guidance in this case, that's where you should go to, is look at Bowles and how that compares. Not Dominguez, this is the case from a while ago, or particularly Howell, which was decided a number of days ago. I see I'm running a little short on time. Unless you have more questions about Nurse Gray, I think we can all agree Nurse Gray is the principal question in this case. Unless you have more questions on that, I'll briefly move on to the corrections officers. As you said, Judge Moore, they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't do anything even arguably negligent. They were called by inmates about an inmate having an episode. They showed up. They called medical. Medical came. They cooperated with medical to get this person seen. They followed medical's advice. The case law says that when you do that, that's not deliberate indifference. And they were not aware of anything with this prisoner that would have independently suggest that they knew more than the medical, than Nurse Gray did about her, about Ms. Olinger's condition. And actually, that with Ms. Lowry, you had a longer interaction with her. Nurse Jarvis was involved in one episode, and then she left for the day. So she was even less involved. So the answer to your question to counsel, I would answer is there is nothing that they did wrong.
Could imagine a case where the officer would see that the nurse was ignoring fundamental matters and where the officer would have a duty to call the supervisor or the warden.
Oh, absolutely.
Is not that case.
Yeah, I could see two cases with which an officer wouldn't be insulated. One is the officer knows more than the medical person does and doesn't share it with the medical officer and knows that the medical officer doesn't know something that they should. And in your instance too, where, you know, somebody has an obvious, you know, obvious wound that's bleeding profusely, and the nurse says, that's not a big deal, send him back. Yeah, but that's not this case. The officers saw him several times treating, doing the normal medical and examinations that they do. The last thing I'll say, because it looks like I got about a minute left, there were also state law wrongful death claims. Our position is the state law claim. Actually, at this point, the state law standard is probably higher post-Brawner than it is here. That's a conscious disregard for a known risk, which I think has a certain subjective component to it for the same reasons that I've been discussing. I believe this, on Nurse Gray's part, this was at most negligence, and there's not even evidence of negligence for the corrections officer. So unless there's questions about that, I have nothing further to present. I thank you for your time here today.
Thank you.
Your Honors, just to your point, Judge Mathis, in that Dominguez case, that was a situation where the jail nurse was aware that the inmate was lightheaded, dizzy, vomiting, and was being told that the condition was getting worse. And in that case, the jail nurse even called the doctor twice. But the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals still said that under the totality of the circumstances, demonstrated deliberate indifference on the part of the jail nurse. And in that case, the trial court denied the motion for summary judgment as it related to the nurse, and this court affirmed that denial. So that's been in play. Nurses should know, jail nurses should know that they cannot act in this manner. These cases are very fact-intensive, as you all know, and if we line up the facts of the case that was just that, the Howe case, and you line them up with the facts in this particular case, you can literally just go down the box. Sickle cell anemia, that's serious. A seizure and a loss of consciousness, that's serious. And how the jail nurse knew and actually witnessed the detainee fall. We have a fall in this case. The Nurse Gray was aware that she had fallen. It's on the video and hit her head hard. Complaints of pain. We've got complaints of pain. So you can literally just go down these and check the boxes, and the facts are applicable in both cases. So for those reasons, Your Honor, we would ask you to reverse that decision and send this back.
Let me ask, as it relates to the wrongful death claim, do you agree with your friend on the other side that it's a higher standard under state law than the federal standard?
I don't know that I agree. I think they are the same standard now. Recklessness is the standard. If somebody's going a few miles over the speed limit, that's negligence. If somebody's going 100 miles an hour through a school zone, that's recklessness. And that's kind of what we have here. I mean, if this was just, the nurse didn't follow a particular policy or procedure or just a single thing, and that's the only evidence that was in the record, then that might just be negligence. And I think the trial court even mentioned in his decision that, you know, this may be medical malpractice. But the facts that, as I just outlined them, that rises it to a whole other level, and that reaches the recklessness standard.
But your opponent said that the test is conscious disregard of a known risk. Do you agree with that?
Do I agree that that's the
standard
for the state law claims? Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think we meet that in this case because Nurse Gray consciously disregarded information and policies that require him to send somebody who's had a seizure or lost consciousness to the emergency room. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your argument. The case will be submitted.